Good evening, everyone. It's good to be back with you. Leave your Bibles, if you would, open to Genesis chapter 11. When I announced the title of the lesson this morning, DIY Living, and I told you it was going to be coming from the book of Genesis, I kind of was hoping that I'd get some guesses along the way, and I didn't get a single guess as to where I was going to be going with that particular title this evening. But it's one of those interesting things that when I think about do-it-yourself living, it's to some extent, we've all are a little do-it-yourselfers. We may not be to the same extent as other individuals, but you think about it. We've done do-it-yourself projects. It may be building a deck on the back of your home. It may have been that you were involved in total home remodeling or something like that, or possibly fixing the car. It may be small jobs like Ron did when he built this right here for the congregation, or for the preachers that would be filling this pulpit. You know, it's interesting that sometimes we have certain abilities, sometimes we have initiative to do things on our own, and we don't have to wait for somebody else to do it. But then there are instances when you think about what takes place right here in Genesis chapter 11, that what was done was not done to please God, but to please man. And so what these individuals were doing is, you think about it, trying to build the world's first skyscraper? Was that necessarily a bad thing? In and of itself, you would say, no, it's not. But once you look at Genesis chapter 11 and those first seven verses, you get to see the motives that are involved in it. And you see that this do-it-yourself project was one that was only going to please themselves. And they had eliminated God from it. And I think it's important for us to understand, yeah, do-it-yourself is great. And sometimes it's good to feel feel good to use your own ingenuity, your own creativity, and sometimes even your own duct taping skills to make you feel better about yourself sometimes. To understand that you can fix things. There are times, though, and one of my favorite comedy TV shows was The Cosby Show. And you remember Cliff Huxtable whenever he put on his tool belt? Sometimes those do-it-yourself projects would go wrong. You could look at Tim the Tool Man Taylor or something like that on those shows where these were do-it-yourself shows. Inevitably, it doesn't matter what happens, whether it's from a small plumbing problem that you've got at home that you think you can fix yourself, sometimes if you don't have the right equipment, sometimes if you don't have the right tools, and sometimes you don't have the ability, or you're not willing to follow instructions, things go wrong. Now, I can promise you, tiling a bathroom would not be something that I would try to do. At least not without watching about 100 YouTube videos to show me how to do it. Without, finding some way to do something like that. But we do things sometimes simply to just make ourselves feel better, sometimes to receive accolades from everybody else. I want you to come see what I've done. And you have instances like this where it looks like and it appears to be that these people are trying to replace God with themselves. And so their do-it-yourself project went awry, didn't it? I think that what you see in Genesis chapter 11 is a very powerful reminder to all of us and to everybody that looks at it. You think about it. We talked about the glory of Genesis this morning and everything that's found within in that book. This is just one small historical story for us to look at. We see the creation in Genesis chapter 1. We see sin entering into the world in Genesis chapter 2 or 3. And we see murder entering into the world for the first time in Genesis chapter 4. We see man going so far awry in Genesis chapter 6 that God decides that he is going to destroy the whole earth by flood and then saving 8 people through that ark. Tells them in Genesis chapter 9 that they're supposed to be fruitful and multiply and scatter throughout all the earth. And you come back to Genesis chapter 11, it doesn't look like things have really changed a whole lot since Genesis chapter 6. Man has a mind to do what he wants to do for himself. And so this story of the Tower of Babel is preserved to remind us that God is not going to be impressed with our own do-it-yourself projects. And when it comes to our faith, comes to our religion, sometimes what you see is just that. Men have tried to do it themselves. They've not opened their Bibles, or they sometimes attempt to open their Bibles, but they only follow through with part of the plan, and then they innovate. And right here in Genesis chapter 11 is one of those innovations that man has come along and said, we're going to do it ourselves. So we may have been involved in those do-it-yourself projects. But what we learn here is building a life, building a marriage, building a career, building a nation, or even building the church in a local community like Fort Smith, without God will eventually come to nothing. I could stop the lesson right there and we'd be finished. You understand the point, don't you? But I want us to look at a few things. I want us to go back to verses 3 through 5. There are two statements that stand out in those verses. Because when you look at them, it says, then they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They had brick for stone and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, come, let us. Now I have them up there on the screen just for that purpose so that they can be highlighted. And we immediately see the mindset of the people of that day. Now, believe me, when I look at Scripture, there are Scriptures that tell us that we need to be doing things. And so sometimes when we say, come, let us do something, we should be doing it according to God's will. In this particular instance, we see them building a city. You know, let's build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us, I didn't highlight that one, but I should have, let us make a name for ourselves. And that sentence right there, or that part of that sentence right there, should also be bolded. If I ever preach this lesson again, it won't be to you, I don't think. I'll save it for later. I'll go back in and fix all this and highlight that right there. But you look at this. A name, make a name for ourselves. They're not doing this to honor God, are they? They're not doing this to exalt Him. They're not simply trying to get to the heavens so that they can see God. They're trying to make a name for themselves. They want to pat themselves on the back. They want to see, look at what we have done. As you look at this, lest we be, you know, and build a tower whose top is in the heavens, let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. I look at this and see immediately that what the very first thing that stands out to me in this was their motivation. And if we are making an application here in this particular text, what they have then is the wrong motivation, don't they? Contrary to popular opinion, the world didn't revolve around them. The universe didn't revolve around them, did it? It should have been around God. But this idea of let us make a name for ourselves is a do-it-yourself idea. It's a humanistic idea. We talk about modern-day humanism. Humanism has been in existence for a very long time. When we start doing things just simply for ourselves, we've inserted ourselves either to be equal or superior to God. But when looking at that, at what happened, pride, ego, is what leads men to that state of mind. And in this, that's what we see. Let us make a name for ourselves is that which, what can we do to glorify ourselves? What can we do to show men who we are? And see, the thing is, they weren't subtle about it either, were they? They were just bold and brash and came right out and said it. Let us make a name for ourselves. So they built a do-yourself significance that inflated their egos. And in pride, they thought, we will build something so great that everyone will be talking about us. Consider that right there. Talking about us. Now, I'm going to use Park Hill as an example here real quick. We have an obligation to our God to preach the truth. We have an obligation also to go into all the world and preach the gospel, not just in this auditorium right here. What would happen if all of a sudden the numbers started growing exponentially? You know, we think about it. What would happen if I'm basing this on a wild dream I had the other night. I'll tell you that right now. I had a dream that we gathered together about 10 or 15 preachers, and we rented out the Fort Smith Convention Center, and we had however many. It was filled to capacity every night. And God, the gospel was being preached. And you know what? We were having record numbers of people obeying the gospel. I got a little scared at the time. We could say, Park Hill's not big enough to sit all that many people there. What are we going to do? Well, we've got to build a bigger and better place. We've got to have something that's ornate. We've got to have this multi-million dollar complex now that we've got to have for people to come. You see, if we build it, they will come. Is that the right motivation? You know, for one, it's wrong in considering if we build it, they will come. We've got things backwards already. You see, if you preach the gospel, they will come. It's not the edifice that they attend, sit in that gets them to come. They won't come to God simply because of a building that's being built. But when we get to a mindset that we have to do things bigger, greater, and grander, we can evoke the name of God and at the same time say, look at us. Remember little Jack Horner who sat in the corner? What did he do? He stuck his thumb in the pie, pulled out a plum and said, what a good boy am I? Well, we can get that attitude too. Our egos can be puffed up. We can get the idea in our minds that look at us. We've made a name for ourselves. In essence, what we should be doing as children of God is not making a name for ourselves, but making God's name exalted above all names. Well, what you end up having here with the Tower of Babel is the wrong motivation and the wrong name or names being praised. What I also see in this particular text is not only a wrong motivation, but I also see a wrong security in this. Because they're thinking about a little bit of their own self-security right here. They were motivated by a do-it-yourself security. They did not want to be, as according to Genesis chapter 11, verse 9, dispersed over the face of the whole earth. Now I want you to consider that when you hear that, that phrase right there says we want to do things our way. We want to be where we want to be. And this really goes back to Genesis chapter 9. Twice in Genesis chapter 9. Genesis chapter 9 verse 1. It reads, so God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Remember how many souls were saved in that ark? Everything had been destroyed. There were only 8 souls that survived. And then you come to Genesis chapter 9 and verse 7, and you see it being repeated again. And as for you, be fruitful and multiply, bring forth abundantly in the earth and multiply in it. God's plan was for man to cover the face of the earth again, wasn't it? And here in this particular context of Genesis chapter 11, what we see that what they decided to do was based out of fear. Instead of settling down and building up, were in direct defiance to God's command. Now, I understand that not everybody that came out of Noah's family may have been a believer over time, may have decided that, you know, okay, they didn't believe in that God, they wanted to worship another God. But they obviously believed in themselves. And in fear, what they did was they concluded that we are safer building up without God than spreading out with God. Have you thought about that? Again, what happens? Wrong motivation, wrong tower. In other words, what they should have been doing is they should have been building up God. And I know we mentioned this in Acts chapter 17 this morning. One of the things that the Apostle Paul said there at Mars Hill, that the God who created all things, what? Does not dwell in temples made with hands. And I think about that term, and I think about what's taking place here. This really wasn't a temple to God. This was a temple to man. But at the same time, it was not a place that God was going to reside. And what God did was He came down and He thwarted the plans by confusing their tongues. So what I see then is a failure to use God's blueprint for what His intention was for man. A failure to follow God's plan. Well, I will say this right off the bat without saying anything else, is that when we do that, those plans will always fail. Now, God may not come down immediately and disperse us and confuse us like He did the people here at Babel. But one thing is for sure. When we try to do things without God, and we think we're just simply doing good things, or we're just good people, without God, we're still nothing. I look at this, we should check our blueprints to see if we are building what God is building and why we are building it. You know, God came down, confused their language, and ultimately what did He do? He started fulfilling His purpose. They were scattered, weren't they? So what they needed to do, instead of thinking of me, myself, and I and their do-it-yourself project, they should have been thinking about God and what He had actually desired from the very beginning. So, the lesson that we learn and the application that we have in this is that we should check our plans. Do they include God? Are they God-driven plans? Are we building what God is building? And why are we building it? Are we building it for our own glorification? Or are we building what God has set in place today and in the 21st century, the church that we are a part of? Are we building it because it makes us feel good? Or are we building it to the glory of God? Are we willing to follow His plans? His plan of salvation, His plan for the work of the church, His plan for our individual lives, His plan for our marriages and our families. Every plan that you can see that is shown within Scripture. Are we willing to follow what God has said? Are we out to do it ourselves? There's our application. Why are we building it? Well, there should only be one reason to build anything when it comes to our eternal destiny. It is so that it praises God, that it honors God, it reveres God, it exalts His name above every name. And we're not in it simply for ourselves. We should check our blueprints. Why? Well, because God will inspect our work just like He did here at this place in Babel. He is going to inspect what they did. In Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 3, the eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good. I know that God is going to judge every work of man. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 14, for God will bring every work into judgment, including the secret things, whether good or evil. See, what was being done, this tower being built, was not hidden from God, was it? He saw it. And in a figurative way, or what He did was He said, He said, let us go down. And what did they do? They inspected the work of the children of men. And they saw that God saw that it was not according to His purpose. He pronounced a judgment on them. And that judgment wasn't destruction at that time, but it was confusion and scattering. Now, there is a good news in all of this. When you consider what's taken place here, something could have changed. These people could have repented. There's no indication that they did. But the good news is we can exchange our building projects for God's. Whatever we're trying to do it ourselves on, we can exchange that instead of saying, let us, or let me, or I will do this, or I will do that. We can exchange that for what does God want me to do? What does God desire for us to do? And we can exchange that then to a place where what we're doing is we're praising Him. When we do that, we begin exchanging our insignificance. Or when I say what can we do, we can exchange our insignificance for His significance. You look at Isaiah, and the prophet there records for us the words of God, my ways are not your ways, my thoughts are not your thoughts. And you think about it in the grand scheme of things, we are this little speck on this planet that was created to show man that He is God and that He is to be our God. What we are in this is, and I don't want to say necessarily that we are insignificant creatures. I mentioned this morning that I believe that the creation of man was that crowning point of creation itself, because we were given the likeness of God in that creation. None of that's not said of any of the rest of creation. Let us create man in our image. But in that, there was a purpose for us. But part of that purpose was to remember exactly how significant our Creator was and still is. We can exchange our insecurity for His security. We can look at our God instead of saying, well, I'm living in fear of what He might do as far as punishment goes. I can live and use His security. And Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 10 says this, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous man runs into it and is safe. It's considering then that what I need is put my reliance in God's plans and understand that when I do things God's way, things will work out for the better. So there is a better name. There is a better tower in which we can put our efforts into. I think about what's stated in this particular context of Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 through 7 there. And I see the efforts that man made to please themselves, to honor themselves. And I think about living in the year 2017. And thinking that, and some people say, we are so far removed from that, that this story is irrelevant to us today. It's not. Humanistic thought is still there. Man supplanting God with himself still occurs today. Man's desire to do things his way is still prevalent today. And so what some may look at as an antiquated story actually lets us know even better that God is. Brother James Blackman, a gentleman I've grown to know over the last 20 years, lost his wife recently, within the last year. He's out in Hereford, Texas. And for a while now, every morning he gets up, and the only statement that he places on Facebook is this: God is. Now imagine what would have happened if these people had that attitude. God is. Well, let me suggest this. The reason the universe is immensely unequal to man's size is that it's revealing the glory of God, not the glory of man. God is. So let us make sure that we have a godly motivation for the things that we do. Let us make sure that we have a security from above, building up with God and not without Him. And let us be careful to use God's blueprint for His church and for our lives, because God is. Take out your songbooks. I want to encourage you, if you have a spiritual need this evening, that we can help you with, to do that which will reconcile your life to God. The song we're about to sing is God is calling the prodigal. And what He's saying is that individual, when you look at that story in Luke chapter 15, that was an individual that decided he wanted to do it by himself. Another do-it-yourself project that failed. But the good news was, in that particular instance, this young man, it says, came to his senses. And what did he do? He came back home. He came back home to the Father. To the Father's security, not his own. To the Father's wealth and protection and forgiveness. And we learn through all of those things that God is. If you're here this evening and subject to our Lord's invitation of come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest, you know that if you do that, you follow God's pattern, God's blueprint for your salvation, that He will be just like that Father in Luke chapter 15. He'll be out there looking for you, waiting for you, and receive you with open arms. There will be celebration in heaven because you've repented and changed. We'll even rejoice with you here. But we want to encourage you to do that. Reconcile your life to God. Won't you come? Together we stand, and as we sing.